Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 66 of the Pika Sorelli podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Namali.
Hello.
And today we're going to actually be talking a lot about the interview that Ian did with Preach this week and some of the implications of that interview. There actually hasn't not been a whole lot of other like monk stuff to talk about this week. Still no Covenant Legendaries. I don't even know if there was raid testing this week. I guess there might have been a little bit on Friday. But
I don't remember.
Very sparse week.
Yeah, it's been light on the news. I just realized that like the two stories I put like, hey, let's talk about what happened last week are literally items from the Preach interview.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean it was a slow news week. I think the patch or build this week didn't change anything. At least there's nothing from a monk perspective in there. There was some initial stuff, like I don't know if you caught it, like the first post that WoW had made had some like old Azerite trait quote unquote changes to it, but that I think was just a data mining error and it's since been removed. So I mean nothing in terms of monk changes. And really nothing big in terms of system changes outside of what was discussed in the interview, which I think we'll get into.
Yeah. We'll get into it. But there's some Torghast stuff that kind of expands on what was said in the interview, because the interview came out before the PTR build went live.
Exactly. Yeah. We should talk about Tuesday.
And the PTR build went up on Wednesday or Thursday.
Let's just want to jump into the interview stuff.
Let's just jump into the interview. I think that is this is one of those episodes that's going to be 90% week in review, and the week in review this week is the interview of Ian Hazzikostas.
Yep, basically. Yeah, so I think Ian, he's done this, I think, pretty much every patch or major patch cycle. Him and Preach sit down and have sort of just a conversation, right? About sort of a bunch of questions. Preach sort of canvasses the community for some stuff and puts his own sort of flavor on it. And they just sort of have a talk back and forth about different systems and maybe what the community doesn't think is great, what they think is, you know, what Blizzard's doing about it, if anything. So covered a wide range of topics. And I sort of dropped some highlights in there. I think there's sort of a live blog sort of, you know, that you can read on WoWhead, right, about all the different points and all the different questions. So I don't think we're going to read that word for word. But there's a couple of interesting things that they sort of talked about. So the first interesting thing was around their legendary plans, or the plans for legendaries in 9.1. And basically, like, are we going to be able to refund anything? You know, like, I think the other question around that was, can we swap legendaries if we're one covenant to the next covenant, right? And basically at this point, you know, Ian basically said no. Like, we're not doing refunds. It's
dumb. If I change from Kyrian to Nightfae, my Covenant Legendary should switch. That's just how it should work.
Yeah.
The fact that it doesn't is incredibly stupid. And it's honestly, like, with the way that a lot of the Covenant Legendaries we've seen, so we speculated a couple weeks ago about the way they were going to tune these Covenant Legendaries, and everything we've seen so far is that they are being tuned high.
Yeah.
So you are probably going to be using a Covenant Legendary. We don't have the Monk ones yet, but there's a lot of really good Covenant Legendaries, which means that this is just a huge, honestly, it almost feels like they're doing it intentionally. Because the roadblocks they put in place to stop people from swapping covenants didn't actually stop people from swapping covenants. So now they're like, fuck you, change your legendary as well.
We need something else, yeah. Yeah, and I kind of see why they wouldn't let it swap back and forth, right? Because it's not, I mean, the one reason that I'm not maybe too upset about it, but maybe I think that they should do it, is around the fact that, like, your covenant choice is a large choice that you make. So, like, the things that sit behind that choice should also be, like, should also hold the same weight as your initial, hey, I'm going to be Night Fae, hey, I'm going to be, you know, Kyrian and things like that. So, I mean, in that regard, Covenant's not switching. I don't know that I'm too, like, upset about it, because it's not like I'm going to end up swapping Covenants on a very regular basis anyway. Like, I think at this point, I've swapped each of my characters maybe once or twice, right?
I swapped Covenants mid-tier from Night Fae to Kyrian. And if I had had a rank 4 Night Fae Legendary, then I would have had to start from scratch, not only in terms of Renown and Soulbinds, which honestly are such a minor power thing for Brewmaster that it barely mattered.
Yeah.
I would have had to start completely from scratch on Legendary, which is a much bigger deal. And I know, like, rank 1 holds most of the power, so it's really only 1 week to be able to get your rank 1. And then, you know, going from a 190 in 9.0 terms, a 190 to a 235 is obviously very good. It's not the same as, like, not having a Legendary. So, I don't know. I'm not happy about Covenant Legendary is not switching.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I sort of see that part side of it. I'm still of the mindset that because Covenants are meant to be such a meaningful choice, that, like, these things that sit behind them are just as meaningful, right? And sort of carry similar weight. So
I don't agree with the premise of that, honestly.
Fair.
Because we have things like Soulbinds are locked behind Covenant choice, but Soulbinds you can swap as much as you want. You can swap from one Soulbind to another Soulbind. You can swap within the Soulbind tree, no limits. The only limit there is conduit energy, which, spoiler, Ian said is here to stay.
Yep.
If you looked at the Twitter thread where Preach was asking people for questions, I scrolled through that for a while. He got a lot of questions. He said he got about 1,000 questions. There were so many people asking about conduit energy. I did not know that many people cared, honestly.
Yeah, just on the legendary piece, I think we just sort of said it, agree to disagree. I mean, I think we each have our points on it, but on conduit energy, here's the funny thing about conduit energy is I bet you the reason that you saw that much on Twitter is, like, just based on the population that probably WoW Twitter users fit in, right? Which are people who follow a game or sort of follow maybe the conversation in the community, you know, maybe are on the, like, upper end of either progression or just interest in the game versus, like, a completely casual player.
More engaged with the game and the community.
Exactly. So I think the community in general doesn't like conduit energy, but it's the side of the community that wants to, like, try everything or does multiple things inside the game, is, like, constantly trying to be at their very best in certain activities. And so that's where conduit energy impacts that group of players the most versus, like, a player who, you know, read a guide 6 weeks ago, picked their conduit, like, picked their soulbind tree, dropped their conduits in. Yeah.
And by the same token, like, on my monk, I haven't ever changed conduit. The last time I touched conduits on my monk was when I switched from Night Fae to Kyrian in January.
Yeah. Gotcha. So all of one time ever.
Yeah. And I do think that, so I don't remember if this was during the interview, if it was something that Preach said after, but he made the point that either, like, there's two modes for conduit energy. Either it doesn't matter at all because the conduit system is totally inconsequential and you never touch it, like me. Like, conduit energy may as well not exist for me because I'm not changing them, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Or it gets in the way of you actually being able to, like, engage in different forms of content, like PvP conduits versus PvE conduits being, I think, the biggest example of that divide, because there's a lot of conduits that are good in PvP, but they're not actually worth anything in PvE. Like, monks have some, for example, that apply a slow when your paralysis expires, and that is worthless in PvE, to be totally honest. It's actually outright detrimental in PvE because the slow will put you in combat if you do a ROP skip in Mythic Plus. So if you run that conduit, you cannot do a ROP skip. It's very bad.
That's funny. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So.
But yeah. I mean, that's sort of where I think I was getting at too. Is like, yeah, there's only two. Like, there's either a group of individuals who are never impacted by this, and it might as well not exist, or a group of individuals that's very impacted by this, and they're essentially playing. They're not able to play the game exactly how they want to, which I get, and I think Ian at least acknowledged that, like, what they want to avoid, at least his quote was, they want to avoid basically people swapping conduits every day, but maybe not every week. Meaning, like, maybe you swap for Monday.
And that's the origin of the original, like, weekly reset thing, right?
Exactly.
Once a week. I think, honestly, the thing that they should have done, and the thing that they still should do, is have it so that your conduits, at the very least, are tied to your spec. Because that's the other big thing, is like, if you play Windwalker and Brewmaster, for example, then, like, maybe you play Brewmaster in Keys and you play Windwalker in Raid, or vice versa. Obviously, the Brewmaster Covenants do nothing for you in Windwalker spec. And the power delta between Soulbinds is actually pretty big. So you can't just, like, You're actually losing a lot to run a Soulbind tree that is not the right Soulbind tree. Running the wrong conduits is actually lower cost than running the wrong Soulbind tree. So you don't want to put the right conduits in the wrong Soulbind tree. You're better off just running the right Soulbind tree with the wrong conduits.
That's hilarious.
It's just really silly. Like, if they do that, for example, I played Windwalker in PvP and I played Brewmaster PvE. If they did that, I was slightly incorrect. When I switched to Kyrian, I was actually switching conduits back and forth because of PvP as well. So, like, it's still around that time frame, but I did actually swap conduits because Brewmaster conduits don't work for Windwalkers. And they could avoid people swapping things around all the time if they just made it automatically swap when you switch specs. That, like,
that's true,
addresses so much of the problem by itself. That if what they actually cared about is people swapping specs and not making the meaningful choice to be an Affliction Warlock or a Destruction Warlock instead of just a Warlock, then, you know, we wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, the conduit energy, I think, is just it's bad. It's bad, I think, at each point there, right? Like, either side of that argument is not good for, like, number one, there's a system in place that either doesn't matter, right? And they spend a bunch of time iterating on it, right? Or it matters so much that it's, like, a pain point for playing the game, so.
Right.
And maybe not a real pain point, I guess, right? Like, almost like an artificial pain point.
Yeah, I think that's really, honestly, the biggest offense to me about it, is that it's not, conduits aren't a big deal. Conduits don't matter. So people getting up in arms about this system that doesn't matter. That is, the problem is entirely inflicted by Blizzard's design of it. And if people just, like, you know, stopped caring about being 100% optimal and were willing to be 99.5% optimal, all of the problem goes away. And that's exactly, like, if I play Windwalker in like heroic raids or whatever right now, like, I'm not swapping my conduits. Screw that. Like,
yeah,
it's not worth the effort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's somewhat of the other side of it. So, I mean, at least from Ian's point of view, they're not going to change conduits. They're not going to change conduit energy. So maybe some adjustment to it, but the idea of it staying,
It's honestly, so one more point on it and then we'll move on. It would be such an easy PR win for them to just say conduit energy being removed in 9.1. Such an easy PR win.
Well, that's the 9.2 announcement, right? So it's the 9.0 bad, terrible, or sorry, PTR or beta, right? Bad implementation, launch with something that's not great, but slightly better. 9.1. Acknowledge that maybe it's not good, but we're not changing it for now. 9.2, change it, everybody back in 9.3, ruin it one more time, but in time to say, hey, we'll fix this in 10.0. So that's sort of been the cycle of like implementing a system that the community dislikes, pushing it through the 9.0 launch, and then in 9.1 being like, we don't have a change for it yet, but we acknowledge maybe we missed the mark. 9.2, implement that fix, and if it hits, awesome. If it doesn't hit, basically say we'll make maybe a minor tweak in 9.3.
But I hate how accurate that is. So like that, to be fair, you just went through, that's the BFA, that's like everything, that's BFA right there.
Yeah,
that's to be fair, also Legion right there.
I stole it from someone on Twitter that mentioned it. But I mean, that's been their MO, that like, hey, it's sort of the idea that like we give a bunch of feedback up front of a system we feel like it's going to be bad as a community. They still think it's going to be a good idea and they don't change until 9.2, 9.3, at which point we've already lived with it for the majority of the expansion. And you know, then it gets thrown out the window, which, yeah, is what it is. So, but yeah, so that's Conduit Energy. I think it's here to stay. The next piece out. So Ian did give sort of a highlight of some of the new Torghast stuff. I think we'll talk about that in sort of a more of a deep dive a little bit later. Because I want to get through the full interview first. But then, so next up was they asked a couple questions about the gems. So we talked about this on the last episode. They've implemented, or there's been data mined, basically gems that can be slotted into specific gem slots on raid gear. So raid gear, I think, drops with a shard of domination gem slot, and you can slot these gems in. So basically what Ian sort of mentioned was what's been data mined is very much work in progress. I think we saw like the original data mined gems, which were super interesting, and the new ones, which were like, do 12% more damage when you have the gem in. So very uninteresting, or healing, whatever it ended up being, right?
Yeah.
But the idea here is that they're basically adding these as like additional bonuses inside the raid, so they can do some cool things a la tier sets, right? Like being able to do some cool things with gems that are very raid specific. And Ian even mentioned like some of this stuff might only work in PvE, right? Like they'll disable some of this stuff for PvP if needed. So,
yeah.
But that's sort of going to be the, like, this is sort of all goes back to that original interview where it's like, this is the corruption system for 9.1, right? Or just the cool thing on top of raid gear system. So,
Although I think this is very deliberately like raid gear only, unlike corruption, which came from everywhere, which is good because that means that there's no, like, nobody's going to be going and doing world quests to get Shard of Domination gear.
Exactly.
Speaking of someone that wore Twilight Dev World Quest Blues all the way until post progression.
Yeah.
Really dumb. But this does make it seem pretty likely to me that we're going to end up in a situation where the people that are pushing keys are once again going to be going for all of the raid gear.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I don't know how surprised I should be about that. I guess I shouldn't be because they capped Mythic Plus like eye level below raid eye level.
So weird.
So, yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. I think, I mean, maybe they make it so it only functions inside the raid, which would be weird because like it sucks if you're doing world quests and you have like half the power.
But then to do those, like, but if the gems are that big, honestly, that's a problem to me. I don't want to go back to BFA where half of my damage comes from procs. Like pre-corruption. I'm not even talking about corruption. I'm talking about essences and Azerite and all of that, where like literally half my damage came from procs.
Yeah, all those bolted on things. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. So hopefully hopefully they're interesting, they're cool, but yeah, hopefully they're not, to your point, overpowered. So
yeah.
That's sort of the gem.
An important before we move on, the ones that we have right now are both work in progress prototypes that they had put together and just got left in the data files. They're not an indication of what the final product is going to be. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. I think just that the system, like this is sort of the way they're sort of adding on power to the gear, will be through these gems. Gems are to be determined is exactly what they'll look like. So
yeah.
So cool. So then a short one here. Tier sets are in the game, or will be coming in the game in 9.2. So Ian was pretty flat out saying, like, essentially tier bonuses are coming. Our bonuses, I forget the interaction between him and Preach is pretty funny if you've actually saw the interview where Ian's just basically Preach is like, our tier set's coming, and Ian's just like, we're making sets that are tiers. And he was like, or Preach was like, so tier sets. And Ian's like, well, what do you think sets that are tiers means? So, I mean, in 9.2, I guess with the next raid, tier sets are back, which to be fair, like, I'm not excited about this at all because
I'm excited about not getting Shard of Domination. I'm excited about not getting some new random system that we have to like figure out.
So here's why I literally don't care. This is sort of the whole thing cycle with Blizzard that I hate, which is they take something away that is arguably one of like the pillars of the game, right?
Yeah.
And then now they're bringing it back and people are like, yeah, tier sets are back. I'm like, first of all, they replaced it with one of the most god-awful systems they've ever implemented in this game in Azerite Armor. Like honestly, like hands down, I will look back and think about others. Like I would rather gear come from the farm in MOP. That was a more engaging system than Azerite Armor. Okay. Like I would be fine having to spend 4 hours a day tilling my fucking farm, watering it, putting plants in it, if it gave me gear, and that was much better than Azerite Armor. Sorry, I'm getting a little heated here. So I'm not excited about this.
You're not wrong, though. That's the thing. You're not wrong.
Yeah, people are going to be like, rah, rah, tier sets are back. I'm like, they never should have left because you replaced them with a god-awful system that I spent 2 years with, right? You never got it right, and you got it to the point where it did not matter. Like, you basically gave us enough choice that it did not matter what your Azerite was. You just got these bonuses. You set it on the next set of gear you got, and it was it. Like, every one of my Azerite pieces was the exact same, like, exact same bonuses. It's just when I got a new piece, maybe the one bonus I wanted was in the second thing until the first thing. And, oh, God, it's so dumb. It's so dumb. So, in any event, tier sets are back in 9.2. Great. Awesome. People can be happy. I'm so salty.
I don't blame you. Azerite was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, BFA was terrible. Azerite was terrible. Corruption was terrible. Like, essences were awful. Like, yeah. No. You're on point.
So, it's funny. Lincoln, yes, this is a Sunday podcast. We're a little off on our days. But gear slot locking,
no.
I would agree with you. On.
No, we got to stop right here. Lincoln says Shadowlands 9.0 is worse than BFA 8.0. No, you shut your goddamn mouth. It is not. Do you not remember the Azerite, the AP grind in 8.0? Do you not remember that? Do you not remember how many Azerite traits were just flat out broken?
It was rough.
Like, okay, Shadowlands 9.0, definitely not perfect. Not even close. There's a bunch of Covenant balance issues. I'm as frustrated as anyone because I am stuck on Kyrian Brewmaster for right now, and I do not want to be playing Kyrian on anything, actually. But it's not even close. Like, even just like, there is no redeeming system from BFA's 8.0. I mean, I would say there's no redeeming system from BFA, period. I think they're all bad. Yes. Because Anima is optional. Anima is totally optional. I have not bothered with Anima at all, ever. Never cared about it. There's the weekly. That was kind of annoying. But actually, fun fact, if you just like happen to miss it 1 week for whatever reason, one, you keep the quest, and two, the next week you can get catch up. So if it's not a week that grants you a soulbind row, then you can just wait a week and get 2 weeks to do your Anima quest.
That's fair.
So he says, but the game lacks the carrot to keep you playing, which is what AP did. I think that's just bad game design. If the reason people keep playing is AP, the game is bad. Like, just straight up there, that's bad. People should keep playing the game because the game is fun. People should keep playing the game because the raids are good. The PvP is good. The dungeon's good. One of these things, all of these things, any of these things. And if they're playing the game because you know, they've got AP to grind, game sucks. Like that just, like, if that's why they're playing the game, that means the game sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think fair AP grind, all that type of stuff, but I mean, just in terms of like tier sets and them coming back, it's just not, it just goes again to those type of systems that Blizzard takes away and then re-adds in a couple years or a couple, you know, patches, whatever it ends up being, and people get excited again. So it's whatever. I mean, tier sets will be cool. They're probably going to not. I mean, to be fair, I think tier sets might have a rose-colored glasses situation too. But
yeah, I think people are going to. I think people are going to lose those pretty quickly when they realize a lot of tier sets suck. A lot of tier set bonuses are actually pretty mediocre and not very interesting.
Yeah,
and like, sure, they're in some cases powerful, but often, like, to use Brewmaster's tier, what was it, 21, the Antorus tier, as an example. Mm-hmm. That tier set was really, like, it went from being the most busted thing in the game because you could have 100% dodge and just, like, spam Breath of Fire and never get hit by anything at all, to being totally worthless overnight, to the point that you wouldn't even equip it. Like, you could have the pieces and just would wear different pieces because they had better stats on them. So, like, I think people are going to get reminded of the fact that tier sets themselves were not perfect. However, I do think that they are better than what we dealt with in BFA. So,
yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So those will be 9.2. I mean, at least we know they're coming at this point. So 9.2, though, at this point seems like a January 2022 release, to be fair. So we got a little bit of time before we see that. So next up, Preach asked Ian just about borrowed power in general and how he feels. And I mean, Ian gave a pretty pragmatic answer here just around the fact that, like, as they add more systems, like, there becomes an issue of systems bloat, right? In terms of, like, systems on top of systems on top of systems. So it's hard to sort of basically introduce something new while also leaving existing things in place. So
imagine again, if you had to go and collect essences in Azerite to raid in Shadowlands.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's sort of one part of it. So they're talking about doing a middle ground. I mean, this seemed like almost like a non-answer in terms of just like, yeah, we get it, but in order to sell you guys a new expansion, we need something new. So it's like, do we balance the old with the new, or do we just say like the old stuff goes away and you get all this new stuff? And it's just like, I don't know. I think that there's a couple systems that they could keep around from expansion to expansion that makes sense. But I get that sort of juxtaposition that they put themselves in, which is like they have to do something new beyond just like story or zones or anything like that, right? And they can't always just keep adding new and new and new, because then we end up in like, when was the first great purge of abilities? Was it
MOP?
Was it MOP, right? Yeah.
You know, but a situation we went from the, maybe it was actually Cataclysm, because Cataclysm, we went from the 51 point talent trees down to the much shorter talent trees, but you could only, like, you had to fill one before you could go to the other ones.
Yeah.
And then in MOP, we went to the new talent style that we've had since.
Right. And they did the great purge of like a bunch of abilities, consolidated stuff, things like that. So that's where the situation you end up, where you have like some classes that have like, you know, a ton of abilities that really at the end of the day, you might use a handful of them, which I think they sometimes go overboard with that. But yeah,
I mean, that's an issue. So Lincoln's got the suggestion. What if they pick one covenant per class and make it baseline, like all druids get convoke? I think that works for some classes and not others. I don't think it works for monks, because none of the monk abilities are actually very interesting or good. Like, yeah. Okay, good in terms of power level, yes. Good in terms of like interesting abilities, fun to press, no. Convoke is, I think, a great example of an ability that druids are going to miss having. Something for paladins like Ashen Hallow or Divine Toll, I think either of those things would be a reasonable choice, and that one you actually run into issues because there's going to be the Divine Toll camp that wants to keep Divine Toll and then the Ashen Hallow camp that wants to keep Ashen Hallow.
Yeah, but I do think that's an interesting point in terms of like keeping a portion of the choice moving forward, and then like just have Blizzard make the choice for you and write it into the story. Like the idea, like at the end of this expansion, like our covenant, like we have linked so much with our covenant as a group, and maybe they make the canonical choice for us that like paladins linked more with, you know, the Venthyr, and like monks linked more with the Kyrian, right? And so that we get to keep the Kyrian ability moving, whatever it's
being. On GCD Weapons of Order ability next expansion, I am not playing.
That's fair. But yeah, so I mean, they are looking at ways to keep, I think they always sort of give this answer about the borrowed power stuff. It's just, I mean, it is what it is. It's just, it was very much an Ian answer when I heard it live in terms of like not answering it. So
it's, Yeah, I like, he's got a point, because like adding an extra row to the talent tree every expansion was not sustainable. But at the same time, like, I can like our current, a lot of classes basically have one set of talents that they run for literally everything. And imagine if instead of building Soulbinds, they had just spent that time working on the talents.
That's fair. I mean,
how much better would the game be?
I mean, I think it would be better potentially in the long term, right? In terms of like maybe not for Shadowlands, maybe for Shadowlands plus the next couple of expansions, right? Because they put the time in for that. But at the same time, I think then Shadowlands becomes less interesting.
I don't think Soulbinds. I guess this is, again, my bias. I don't think Soulbinds add anything to the game. I am like, I'm an extremist on that one. Like, delete Soulbinds, they don't matter. I think they're worthless.
That's fair, but then to my point, and maybe looking at this more as like a product you're trying to sell, like that's one less thing they can put on the box. So
Lincoln, you did miss the part about conduit energy. You will have to check the VOD for that one.
So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is with the systems moving forward, but we'll see. I don't know. People want to make new stuff. I think that's the other problem. You run into like, you want to be like the first to do something new. So
I think that the the Covenant abilities honestly fill that role. Like they are the most Covenant abilities and legendaries. Like those are the exciting parts of Shadowlands for me. Those are the exciting bits where like I level a new character and it's like, ooh, I hit level 50. Now I get to go and pick my Covenant. Now I can like use the new Covenant ability. You know, I hit 50 on my DK or 48 or whatever level it lets you pick your Covenant. Uh-huh. And I went and got Grabby Hands. And I was like, ooh, Grabby Hands, let's go try this out. Right? It's like, that's cool. And then you hit 60 and you get to get a legendary that you add on top. And like, that's cool. That's fun. I don't think that Soulbinds ever have that, really.
Fair enough.
So that's, yeah. But we're getting really off topic now, so.
That's true.
And we actually do have a time limit today because Anam's got someone to pick up from the airport.
I do, unfortunately. So maybe we'll actually have a shorter episode today. We'll see. So that's sort of on the borrowed power pieces. I mean, I think we'll see it once we get the new expansion, exactly what they're thinking about keeping. Maybe in 9.2, 9.3-ish, we'll see what they might want to keep. But yeah, they're looking at it. Next up, they did a couple of questions just around like item level variants, which I didn't think is too exciting in some of the alt readiness, which is, you know, it is whatever. But the next, I think, big point for me was just healer DPS and the inequality of healer DPS. Mm-hmm. And so like this specifically hits on one of the biggest things that I see, which is really just paladins, right? And Ian touched on this, is that, I mean, and I think they understand the underlying issue. It's that the issue isn't that healers do damage. It's when healers do damage essentially for free. So like the idea of having free damage is when your highest throughput rotation also has the highest amount of damage associated to it, right? And so the biggest offender of this is paladins, just in general.
By far.
Like even like discs, I think disc sort of falls outside of this in that they have to do damage to heal. So like it's very much a like part of what they do, fine with it. But yeah, I mean, paladins is, their
damage is also a lot lower because they're designed with that in mind. Like you only get so much free damage from a disc priest because they were designed with the intent that, okay, they have to do damage. They tune the healing numbers that they get from the damage so that the damage can be like there, but not too high while the healing is still good. But paladins, like, oops, Ash and Hollow, oops, Glimmer of Light.
It's just, it's honestly, it's ridiculous. Cause I mean, I play paladin now and in all of our like raids and played it for the last half of, really the last like three bosses of progression for Nathria. It's literally like I sit in melee and I do a bunch of damage and like it and I just do a bunch of healing too. Like, I don't understand. Like, to that point, like where like the other healers there? Like at least like for like shaman and druid, I understand, you know, they have to stop, they have to put up dots, they have to spend some amount of mana, right, to do it, at least in the druid's case, right? But yeah, for like Mistweaver, holy priest, like it's, you lose so much healing to do damage, which is crazy. So, and then
actually a disgusting amount of GCDs to do damage is Mistweaver, because yeah, you gotta sit there, you're hitting Tiger Palms so that you can get your blackout kick and get multiple blackout kicks and hope for an RSK reset, and then your RSK, and it's like, that's so many GCDs that you're not healing people.
Exactly, which is crazy when like with Paladin, it's like every other second you're hitting Crusader Strike and Holy Shock, and like you're doing damage plus healing, and it's like mana, almost mana neutral at that point, which is the other ridiculous part. So
yeah,
and so Ian, I think Ian touched on this.
Holy Paladin mana is a enormous meme in my guild. It's like we joke about giving the Holy Paladin innervate so that they can end the fight at 100% mana instead of 90% or whatever.
It's, yeah, I mean that's. And it's, yeah, it sucks too, because the other part of that from a Paladin perspective is the playstyle is fun. Like playing Paladin is actually, like I enjoy it. Like I enjoy the idea that you, and I think I've talked about this in other ways of why I enjoyed Mistweaver so much, is that the fact that you do damage to like generate a resource and then use that resource to heal, I think is a fun cycle. And so like for me, it sucks because I actually enjoy playing it. So like maybe I don't want it to be changed, but at the same token, it's like it's they're just out of control. And then like, yeah, to that point, Ashen is just a ridiculously good ability for damage and healing both, right?
Yeah.
Like healing wise, like we essentially like using it. I use it on the fourth pillar of Sludge Fist, and like as long as people live the hit, they will not die.
Yeah.
Because Ashen is absolutely ridiculous in terms of healing at that point. So I don't know, it's out of control. For what it is, but they did touch on it. I think, you know, they've talked a little about it. It's funny that Ian mentions both Holy Paladin and Disc Priest. I'm less concerned with Disc, to be fair. Like I'm fine if Disc does top damage. I think as a community and as a game, it makes sense. But Paladin is just the outlier in all of this. So hopefully, but it's funny. Hopefully, we'll see changes. But then we see their fucking Ash and Hollow Legendary, and you're just like, what the hell, Blizzard?
So, yep.
In any event, that's healer DPS. Again, I think they've at least got the idea that the problem is that free damage component, like being able to do damage, which is also inside of your highest HPS rotation, is of course the issue. So,
I think that is spot on. I would say I would prefer us move more in that Final Fantasy direction of all the healers do DPS as part of doing their job. And it doesn't necessarily. Like, it doesn't need to be everybody doing damage to heal in the way that, like, Disc Priest does and Holy Paladin gets benefits from doing damage. But I think it would be good for us to move more in that direction. Because that's fun. Like,
it is. It actually is a good time. So, So that's on healer DPS. Only about two more questions to go through. So next was just on raid utility and cooldowns. This is just pretty funny. Preach basically outed Death Knights, and Ian basically acknowledged, hey, AMZ's too good.
Yeah.
As a cooldown. Like, so they're definitely talking about changing AMZ. So we will more than likely see AMZ changes coming in 9.1 for certain. But just in general, in terms of like raid utility and cooldowns. They touched actually a couple of interesting points here. First one being that like they want to basically include utility type things like AMZ or you know other things like that at the class level, not just at the spec level, which I think is good and bad. I think it's good in terms of like moving it to the class level, so that no matter what spec you play underneath of that, you basically bring similar levels of utility or similar whatever that ends up being. Right? You don't have to be
adding darkness to vengeance.
I don't know, maybe not. Maybe that, I mean, they do that. That's God. I mean, Vengeance is already good. It just means Havoc just never gets played. Right? Like,
like, Blood doesn't get played because Unholy brings AMZ.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what they have to balance around it. But the idea, I think, is there that they want to sort of basically move towards overall spec stuff, which is interesting. And then also wrapped up in this conversation was around the melee raid encounter spots, right? Which which I think was an interesting topic. If you haven't seen, Max did a video on this, did like a discussion around like why certain melee are never going to be played and why like utility on melee is so important. It's just that like there's not a ton of spots for a lot of melee specs. So like healers run into this, I think, slightly similarly, but like the idea is the same, is that you have like a set number of spots in your raid and you can only bring so many people to fill those spots. So like certain specs are just going to be left out. Right. Yeah. And so did not win the fight with my kid. Sorry, Lincoln just asked if I got punched in the face. If you're watching the video, you'll notice I do have a nice little shiner. My youngest was jumping on the trampoline we have in our house, and I went to like catch her, and she jumped weird and just smacked me right in my lip. So in any event, I have a little bit of a bruised lip. But no, that's so like amazing. I think the melee discussion is interesting. They're basically, it all has to do with, like Ian was right, it all has to do with their encounters. It has nothing to do with the actual classes. It's just that like certain encounters favor bringing more range than other encounters, or in general,
think,
a lot of people.
I don't think it's even certain. I think it's just most encounters favor ranged over melee.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, it can be like for a multitude of reasons. It's funny too, because I think melee is actually easier to play in, right, than it ranged is. I think it's just the fact that like ranged offers you so many more options in terms of like you continue to do damage if a mechanic pulls you off the boss. You can, you know, you continue to move and do damage in a lot of cases with a lot of, you know, range specs, where like melee, if they ever lose contact with the boss, their damage is zero, right?
Yeah.
Or the target. So,
and it's funny because there is one melee spec in the game for which that is not true. It is Survival Hunter. And nobody plays it because they don't bring any utility.
Yeah. That's fair. But yeah, so they're taught. I mean, Ian brought it up. I mean, it's on the encounter team to design stuff that doesn't punish melee. But I mean, to be fair, I think unless you bring it mechanics that melee have to do that require you to have melee issue, it's going to be an issue. So, and then the final thing I thought that was interesting was just around AoE caps. So like the idea of like, they basically don't, I mean, I think Ian probably came out and finally said it, is like, they don't want the big pulls in Mythic Plus. Like they just want people to pull everything, do a bunch of damage and like AoE it all down. They wanted the AoE cap to sort of curtail that aspect of the game. The problem is they left uncapped AoE in the game. And so the classes that now have uncapped AoE are now magnitudes better. They're magnitudes better. So, I think they're sort of talking about maybe changing this, but like,
I think the way that they're going to go is that they are going to reduce the AoE damage of those classes, either by introducing a cap or by just cutting their AoE damage.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's actually going to make the game feel any better for anybody else. Like,
no.
This is one of those things as well where I much like Soul Mines and Conduit Energy and all of that stuff, this feels like something where they are making the game worse in order to satisfy their like theoretical design goals. Like they've got these design goals in their minds, and their design goal for Mythic Plus is you pull a pack and you play the pack and you pull another pack and you play that pack. Not that you pull five packs together and like that's what you do. And so they've got this in their head that this is the way they should be doing this, and in the pursuit of making that the way that people actually do that, they are making the game worse in other areas. And it's not good.
I don't like the AoE cap, the GCD stuff. These just seem like weird things to put in the game, and like maybe and here's the problem I think that I have with it, is that they do these things in service of a design goal, to your point, but we never see the outcome of that, right? Because one of the things Ian mentioned in the answer to this question was they want to have like niche classes that have like 2-target cleave, 4-target cleave, whatever that ends up being. But there's not like, I don't feel like there's encounters or anything like that that hit on those specific things, right? Like there's not like encounters where like you bring classes specifically because they do 2-target cleave so well, right? Like, or four target cleaver, you know, whatever it ends up being. So,
there are cases, stuff like Shavara in Antorus, where like you brought warlocks and shadow priests because of multi-dotting. But that's
fair. But that's like
it was spread AoE, basically, like super spread AoE. Right. Also an example of a fight that was extremely melee unfriendly.
Exactly. Right. But I mean, like, that's one fight that we could,
yeah, you
know, where they, yeah, where they're maybe not specifically designed it around that, but the classes excelled at it. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I think the Mythic Plus, this is sort of another area where we start to get into Blizzard trying to balance almost now a third aspect of the game, right? There was always this sort of conversation around like PvE and PvP balance, and like some classes making changes in one impacts, you know, other aspects of the game, right? And now you sort of have layered in on this is like the Mythic Plus, you know, gameplay now that sort of adds more complexity to what they have to do. But
and so Lincoln raises the point, AoE caps are not new. They were in the game for 12 years. And he's correct, but also Mythic Plus was not in the game for those 12 years. And when you have, this is again, like, there are 5 slots in the Mythic Plus group. There are 3 DPS slots. This is kind of the same thing that happens with melee, right? They get pushed out of raid, not because they're bad, just because there are limited melee slots. When there's only 3 DPS slots, you're just going to take the ones that are the best at AoE. Like, that's always how it is because of how trash dominant Mythic Plus is. You will never take a class that is like super, super good single target to a Mythic Plus dungeon. Doesn't matter if it's like, the only case I could see that happening is like a very high tyrannical key, but nobody does very high tyrannical keys, let's be honest, and they're not going to do it next season either. So
that's fair. So I mean, AoE cap, maybe, I mean, we'll
but
see
even
what they do.
Like Lincoln, even outside of world class keys, like we see people do this whether they need to or not. They take the ones that are better at AoE. Like, even if you're not doing a world-class key, if you're just doing a weekly 15, even if it's tyrannical, so much of your time is spent doing trash. Just having better AoE is better. And part of the problem is that something like Boomkin has better AoE even on like 1 or 2 packs than a lot of classes do on 1 pack with target caps, which is part of the issue. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of one of those other community things that sort of there's probably 2 sides of this that some point of it, but I mean, it just seems like another.
I only do keys in guild, basically. I have pugged a bunch actually on my warrior gearing it up, but it's basically because I'm a tank. I just like apply to random stuff and get invited and don't really care about the comp. But in guild, like, I don't care. I know we can do a 15 on literally anything. So like in BFA, I did keys where we were like 2 Shadow Priests, a Warlock, and a Mistweaver with my Brewmaster. And it's like, this is an awful comp. But it didn't matter because we were all raid geared and we could just blast through a 15. It didn't matter.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess Lincoln does make the good point of saying that like the pug mentality shouldn't be what Blizzard designs around, which is fair.
I don't agree with that because the pug mentality is the way that most people, like the pug environment is the way that most people play the game.
Yeah, but it's always going to be toxic there. Like, not always, but there's always going to be the idea that there's a, like, that's the one area where I think Ian mentioned this in the thing, like, they're not going to design around something, like, they're going to be fine if something's within, like, a couple percentage points when they talk about any sort of system. So, like, that's awesome for them to design around. And like in a pug environment, they don't care because somebody wrote down somewhere that this is the best or this is sort of what you do. And the idea is that if you don't play that, you're considered sub-op. Like you're considered basically almost, you know, sandbagging the group, right? Which is not something that Blizzard can change because that's us doing it, right? Like when I say us, I mean like...
I don't really agree with that. Like... And so Lincoln says the game should encourage you to find guilds or set groups. And like, sure, that's a great goal, but it shouldn't be like unfun to play the game if you don't have one. Like, I don't, WoW is not special, okay? WoW doesn't get to be the game that requires you to have a group to have fun. And that kind of mentality is a part of why stuff that is more pug friendly, like Final Fantasy, like League of Legends, just is bigger. Like, there are more people playing it because it's easier to do things that are fun without having a set group of people to do them with. Like, if my guild fell apart tomorrow, I would quit WoW. I would, like, not even a second chance. Like, this would be the final episode of the podcast. I would never play WoW again. But the people I played Final Fantasy with largely quit. There's a couple of people that still play, but it's fine because I can still go and pug things and have a good time.
Yeah, that's a fair point too. But yeah, I mean, I think slightly off topic to the whole AOE cap discussion. Sorry, I don't mean to cut us off, but
yeah,
it's a much larger conversation. We are running
short on time though. And we still have a few things that we had wanted to get through.
Right.
If I remember right, you have like 10 minutes before you got to head out.
No, so I still have about 40. So we still have a little bit of time. So I think we can finish off. Maybe we'll skip our lore corner this week.
Okay.
We'll get to that next week. So there's a couple more things I just wanted to touch on from both the interview and then what they actually pushed to the PTR this week, which I think are interesting. So the biggest thing is like they actually added the first, I guess, public look, right, of the new Torghast scoring system and what's going to be there. And it's actually really interesting in terms of like how they're looking at Torghast. So in the interview, Preach asked a question about how they thought Torghast went. And essentially Ian's response was like, they think it went well, but the problem was that it was too hard. So for like some specs and class to get into it. So what they ended up doing was just making it so you couldn't fail it.
So it was a combination of that and the fact that you only got the rewards if you completed it.
Right. So it's
those two rewards things felt mandatory for other types of content. It's like you had to get your soul ash. You had to do the max layer every week.
Right. So yeah, sort of that binary pass fail and the fact that like failure rates were, I think in their mind, probably too high in terms of like how important the soul ash or the rewards were. Right. So they basically have implemented sort of a couple new things that sort of all sort of tied together. So they implemented essentially a scoring system now for Torghast, which rewards, I guess, a couple of different things, right? It rewards speed, it rewards how much you complete inside of each layer, and then how far you get. And like, there's a bunch of different components to it. Looking at how the scoreboard sort of calculates, I'll just sort of read it. So it's like completion. If you complete it, you get points. Par time, so if you beat whatever time Blizzard sets is the time you need to complete this in, you get points for that. There's how many souls you click and urns that are breaking, you get points. So like as you sort of clear everything, you get points for sort of exploring more and more. So there's sort of a how much can I explore and still meet the par time. So a bunch of different things go into the score, and then based on your score, you get, I guess, gems. So you get 1 out of 5, essentially 1 out of 5 score. And then if you get 5 out of 5, you get the max rewards, right, for completing that Torghast run, right? Right. So that's the idea in terms of like the way it ends up working. And then your rewards are based on your score. So again, more score, or more gems you get, more rewards you get at the end. And the rewards, of course, are like the typical soul ash, and then the new currency, soul cinders, which I don't think we talked about, but soul cinders are the
soul ash that you cannot grind in 9.0.5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's to make the new ranks, the new legendaries is what soul cinders are. But you get both rewards when you complete Torghast. So if you ever wanted to make a lower end legendary or upgrade one of the lower ones you already have, you can still do that because you get both rewards at the end.
So if you want to make an off-spec legendary next patch, actually, if you want to make an off-spec legendary, you can make it right now because you can get soul ash right now, but you can do it next patch as well because only soul cinders are required for making the new stuff, not soul ash. So if you have a rank 4, upgrading it to rank 6 will only require soul cinders, at least as things are right now, which means that extra soul ash you're going to get, you can just use, like, I could make a Mistweaver legendary and use it on exactly one boss because I'm only ever going to play Mistweaver on Sun King, let's be honest.
Exactly. Yep. And there's a couple of new things. So the other thing is like there's a new empowered buff that you can gain where like if you basically fill your bar up to a certain point and like keep that streak of, I guess, average points you're gaining, right, you'll stay empowered, which is like a movement speed, I think, increase and haste increase. So interesting. I mean, the scoring system seems fun. Well, yeah, the scoring system seems cool. And that's not all they've done with Torghast. They've added the scoring system to sort of now you get rewards no matter how fast or slow you end up doing it, right? They've also added torments to certain floors. So before these were sort of like one, it would basically be whatever wing you went into had a negative debuff on you. And like as you climbed higher, the debuff got higher and, you know, higher. Like the fire one, I think, is notorious. It like did a percentage of your health
every couple seconds. It's really annoying. So I did that on my warrior this week, and on my monk, I never really cared because I could just stop between packs and vivify myself, right?
Yeah.
Warrior can't do that. Yeah. So it's like, oh, if I'm going into a new pack and I'm really low, like I just have to go in and hope I kill something in time to victory rush before the dot kills me.
That's funny. Yeah. So, I mean, that's they've taken that system and now they've added torments based on the floor you're on. So like as you go higher and higher in your floor count, you basically add new torments. So it's not just like one torment that increases in power. It's now going to be like multiple torments that sort of layer in and sort of just like stack on top of each other. So that's a little bit interesting. It sounds like based on at least with on the PTR is that the torments are set for a week. So like I think they slot in at levels like at layer 4 and 5, 6, 7, then 8, 9, 10, and 12. Basically, you'll have up to 6. One gets added each one of those layers, and they're set for the week. So you'll get, you know, the same one every time you hit layer 4. You'll have the same torment every week, or for the week, sorry. So this will be interesting to see how they do debuffs and how that sort of comes into play, making Torghast maybe slightly harder, which maybe then it becomes sort of the grinding solo content that it was meant to be, right?
I would be pretty happy if they made it harder. Like, I was running around. My warrior, at this point, my warrior was 190, and I was already at the point where just like I just went straight for the end of every floor and just like took whatever powers I got and I could complete it no problem. And it's like,
yeah,
still 30 something eye levels below where it's eventually going to be. Like, doing Torghast now on my monk is a complete joke, even if I don't get the vivify powers.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's sort of the new torment stuff they've added. Again, slightly way to increase difficulty as you do it, and coupled with the scoring system, you're still gonna get some sort of reward even if you fail, which is good. And the final thing they've added is talent trees to Torghast, essentially Torghast talent trees. So there's a sort of a placeholder one. I don't know if it's placeholder, but the initial iteration's up there. It's essentially just like buffs you gain or buffs to what you do while inside of Torghast. So it runs from like you get less torments when you start a run to like you empowerment lasts longer, like it's delayed in terms of like when it'll reset.
So during the interview, damage, Ian did comment that the Venari stuff had been intended to be a kind of like Torghast talent thing in 9.0, and obviously they missed the mark on that because the Venari stuff didn't come from Torghast. It came from doing the Maw, and those two pieces of content were not the same despite being like located in the same area,
like linked. So this is now, I think, a true do Torghast, gain some sort of, I'm going to call it anima power, I think there's an actual name for it, but gain something that then lets you basically purchase talent points for Torghast. And I guess it's really not talent points because you're not really, well, kind of, it's like you will eventually get everything if you run Torghast. So it's almost like you're, you know, your artifact weapon, or
it is like
the Horrific Visions, I think, was another good one.
There was like one thing on Horrific Visions that you could like skip. Like, there's that one row where you went either left and you got the group stuff, or right and you got the solo stuff.
Right. And then there was like a side talent on those.
Yeah. And like that was, but yeah, basically you get everything.
Yeah.
It's just a question of which things you get. And fingers crossed, unlike the vision stuff, this won't have sockets locked behind it. So you won't be rushing to the end of it to get your sockets. Fingers crossed. Pretty good. Fingers crossed. We have no confirmation of sockets. We don't know where sockets come from in 9.1 yet, right?
No. I'm hoping they just stay in Venari. We're still grinding Stygia for the next 6 months. So
why would you hope for that?
I'm kidding. I don't know. It's on whatever the new currency is for the new zone. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the new Torghast stuff. I'm actually, so funnily enough, I actually enjoyed Torghast when running it because I think it was a fun activity to do with your friend, like with my friends.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like
doing Torghast in groups is way better than doing it solo. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so it was fun. It'd be cool to see the new difficulty stuff they add in. So yeah, so next up, other big thing is, I don't know if these were, this is sort of, I think, the Wowhead post for it, but they data mined a bunch of the raid trinkets coming up. So I took through, at least looked at the intellect ones. I didn't look at the other ones because who cares? But I don't see it, like a couple of interesting ones. It'll be interesting to see how they actually played out in terms of like what they do. But I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to read through any of these. None of them.
A few of them.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of the tank ones that were people were joking about because all of the numbers on them are tiny. Like reduce the next attack you take by 545.
And you're like, it's nothing.
No. Yeah. So those are obviously like tooltip issues. Some of them are probably also tuning issues, but tooltip issues first, tuning issues second. And once we actually are able to get them in game, we'll have a better idea of what they do. But the tank ones are, there are a couple of interesting ones. Like there's one that it's a cheat death trinket, except that you get to choose whether you use it or not. So
that's cool.
Or when you use it as well. Like you have, I think based on the data mining, it looks like you have like a 3-second window that you can choose to use the trinket or not.
That's cool.
And so that means that, for example, if it makes sense for you to get B-rezzed right then, you can get B-rezzed. It also doesn't have the downside of killing your raid like the Alar trinket does. So probably going to be the go-to cheat death trinket going forward. And then there's one that's not a tank trinket, but it is while your health is above 50%, your highest stat, secondary stat is increased by an amount. And while below 50%, it is decreased by that same amount. And that one, I know it varies a lot from tank to tank, but that one sounds kind of spooky to me. And maybe it is just like the Buonsomni thing in BOD, the Buonsomni Azerite trait, that when you're below 20%, you took extra damage.
That's true.
But for Brewmaster, all of our stats are defensive stats, except for haste. And haste is never going to be your highest stat, except for like meme builds. So like all of our stats are defensive stats, so if you drop below 50%, suddenly you're noticeably worse defensively. Like if your mastery is your highest stat and then suddenly you drop your mastery while you're already low health, you're less likely to dodge, more likely to die. I don't know how I feel about that one. It is going to depend on tuning though, because if it is like tuned to the point that the upside is worth it, like
that's true,
it could still see use.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a, yeah, so trinket wise, they sort of got it all. That's an interesting trinket. Yeah, none of the healer, like it's tough to see which ones are specifically healer ones. There is an intellect trinket that allows you to res a fallen ally as a skeletal warrior, which seems interesting. On a 10-minute cooldown, that seems fun. And there's also a trinket that's like every time an ally takes damage, you heal them for an instant amount, which depending on tuning might be literally out of control.
You remember that Azerite trait from Mistweavers that for a very brief time healed Brewmasters for every single tick of stagger?
Which one was that? Was
I don't know. It got an ICD added, and so it was immediately went from like, this is extremely good if you're healing exactly a Brewmaster, to this is awful, never use this.
Yeah, I forget which one that was. I remember that though. Yeah, so I mean, this is maybe, and it's an interesting trinket to see how they do it. I'm assuming it'll be fairly underpowered just because Blizzard generally passive stuff like this is fairly underpowered, but some interesting stuff coming in. So raid trinkets, at least initial cuts are out to see where their heads are at, where Blizzard's heads are at. So
yeah, I would say for tank stuff, nothing looks like super exciting. But then again, like there's a lot of things, for example, Dimas back in Legion, LPS from Nazoth, and the Hakkar trinket right now, all of them are like fairly boring trinkets, but they have big numbers on them. So really what we're waiting on a little bit is just to see which of these trinkets have actually good numbers on them for as far as the tank stuff goes.
Yeah. So So that is the raid trinkets. We'll see how they go. And the final point here, and I think I'll get to the question that was just posted in chat in a second, but the final item we wanted to cover from last week is they didn't release this, but it was data mined basically what the Season 2 Mythic Plus affix is going to potentially be, which essentially is when you defeat Jailer's forces, gain cool powers, which is sort of placeholder text. It's got the PH in front of it. But what people are insinuating is that essentially maybe certain mobs in dungeons will now contain a buff that you receive when you kill them. And this sort of goes in line with all the different anima powers that were data mined. And some of those potentially are used on the first boss in Sanctum Domination. What's the name of the Torghasi thing? Trogador?
Now I'm thinking it's the Tarrasque, and it is not the Tarrasque. It is the Terror Grew.
I never remember it. So some of them are probably associated with that fight, but potentially these are ones that sort of impact or get slotted into Mythic Plus. I think there was a point maybe made after the post, which was essentially a lot of the more boring ones are probably the Mythic Plus ones, like increase versatility, increase your stat by increase the stat by a specific amount. But yeah,
if they are going to give Mythic Plus powers for like pulling random packs in Mythic Plus, like the powers you get had to be like consistently good to make that a good choice. Otherwise, that's just true. Like sometimes when you pull something you already were going to pull anyway, you get a bonus.
Right.
If like, imagine how bad it would feel if you went out of your way to pull a pack for the anima power in it, and everybody in your group got garbage from it, and you just like wasted a minute pulling this pack and got nothing from it except for some percent.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they probably won't. I mean, I hope in terms of I hope the way they implement this is that the buff is very noticeable about what it will give you. So like you will see, like similar to the way they did, season 2 in Legion was the like four different or three different mobs that like you buffed. Beguiled and whatever those were. So hopefully it's something like that where you can tell immediately like when I kill this, I will get this buff or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But we'll see how they implement this one. So this will be, it's an interesting look at it where it's sort of, maybe to your point, maybe the way that they end up doing this is they hide the powers certain places, or not hide it, but like they put powers off the route, like the beaten path, where like you have the.
I mean, that we know from some of the stuff they've said about the seasonal affixes in BFA that like the way they positioned beguiling was intentional to try and make people like switch up their routes, which I found frustrating because I'm not a big Mythic Plus person and I just want to do my weekly key, and having to like do a different route every single week was really annoying. The same thing with Awakened, like they positioned those in some cases off the beaten path, in some cases for the linear dungeons like King's Rest they didn't have a choice,
right,
but they were trying to mix up people's routes. So I expect them to do that same thing here. They're going to put the anima powers in places that they're like, they're going to look at where the routes are these days, which I think a lot of dungeons have a fairly static route that most people do, and they're going to position the anima powers to try and get people to mix up those routes.
Yeah, which will be, it'll be cool. We'll see exactly how this lays out. But this is I mean, the problem is Awakened, was so good. So good that, I mean, this seems interesting. It just depends on exactly, if the powers are literally boring, like you gain more of a stat, like it seems like that would suck. But if it's actually something interesting where it does something cool while you do it, you know, maybe fun to see. So potential Season 2 Mythic Plus FX looks like it's going to be something around quote unquote anima powers or buffs you get for killing certain mobs. So
nobody should go out of this making the mistake of thinking that these are actual anima powers that you would get in Torghast, because they are not. They are like the ones that you get in Raid, which are very limited in scope and power.
Exactly.
Which, side note, I saw people on the WoWhead post about the anima powers in Raid asking for actual anima powers on the boss. And
the whole, like, we should get corrosive dosage. Like, no, because then you literally stack a bunch of, like, monks, right? Let's heal each other.
I mean, I know it's just the first boss, but that sounds awful. I don't want to sit there and spam Vivify for 5 minutes while the boss dies.
So it'll be, there'll definitely be new anima powers at that point, but it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. It might be fun. It might be cool if the powers are cool. So, So yeah, so that, I think, I don't know if you had any other topics for this week. That's really what I wanted to cover before we get into, my second favorite section now, because we can't do my favorite section. Unfortunately, I'm under a time crunch today.
That's why we can't do the lore corner today. So we're going to jump straight into the Q&A.
Right. So that means if you guys want your questions answered, we will answer them. You just got to send them to Emelson or myself. Throw them in the show notes. We'll answer your questions. We pretty much answer any question that gets tossed our way. There are limits. We will no longer say we have no limits. There are limits to our questions that we will answer on the show, but generally it's everything. So I'm actually going to pull the one from Twitch chat first, because Jamili, TTV, I'm assuming Twitch TV, so or TV, Jamili TV, you're on TV, cool. They ask, any chance Mistweaver grow up in the next raid? No. Next question. No, I mean, let's be honest. Like, we've seen very little in terms of Mistweaver changes other than a bunch of PvP changes. It does not seem this is the patch that we will get a rework, if anything. And I believe for us to see any sort of raise our community perception, we need something more of a major rework in that regard. I think we're still good, as referenced by the tier list I put together 2 weeks ago.
A Mistweaver set today so I could play it on Kael'thas.
Yeah.
Real quick, there's another question from Lincoln from earlier that I answered in chat, but I want to answer here as well. Do you think they will announce the next expansion this year? My answer was no. I do not think that if we get a BlizzCon at the end of the year, I don't think there will be an expansion announcement. I think it'll just be, here's 9.2 stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. I think...
If they do announce it, we're getting... This is like Shadowlands is WoD 2.0. That's like... If they do announce an expansion, like, do not expect a 9.3.
Yeah, so I think that's a fair point. I would also, going by the fact that we potentially get a 9.3 this year, this expansion, then a expansion announcement this fall is too soon. But I could see something, because to be fair, I don't think 9.2 will drop until after the first of the year, based on the current timing. So, like, the idea there is that 9.2 after the first of the year, 9.3 this, but maybe summertime next year. And then right into an expansion next fall, it seems really quick. So if they do announce something, off the off chance, sort of hedge my bets here, I don't think they're announcing anything, but if they do, 9.2 is the final patch for this expansion. So it'll be a short one.
And then one more Twitch chat question from Jaken. Most underrated and overrated Brewmaster talents in Mythic Plus? I think overrated is Bob and Weave, hands down, no competition. People love running Bob and Weave. I don't know why. I do know why. They look at the top keys. The top keys are running Bob and Weave. The top keys are running Bob and Weave because the damage intake is so high and their groups are good and get kicks. So they don't need dampen harm for the emergency. Oh no, my group didn't kick things and now I'm dying kind of situation.
Right.
And then actually on that same talent, or I would say most underrated actually, is Healing Elixir. People don't like running Healing Elixir, apparently. They're like, just ignore it. It's there, I guess. Like, it's actually super good in like medium keys. I run it pretty frequently. It's fine. Like, if you're not doing pulls that you actually need a second defensive cooldown, or if you're running the Hikar Trinket that basically replaces Dampen Harm, honestly, it's better than Dampen Harm. In a lot of medium keys, Healing Elixir is pretty good. Like, so on that same row, actually.
Fair enough. Okay, cool. All right. Well, thank you for the questions. We'll continue on with two that were posted or given to us earlier. We have two from sort of our sort of long time question answers. I'm not going to say listeners. I don't even know if they listen, but you better be. Soji asks. What are some weird food combinations you guys like? Not necessarily just weird food combinations, but also like spices or seasonings that quote unquote don't make sense for some foods or whatever.
Okay. So once upon a time, I was talking with some coworkers at a previous place I used to work. And I mentioned that I had made breakfast burritos. Okay. With awesome. The rice in the breakfast burrito was seasoned with cinnamon.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like nothing. Like it's not a like super strong seasoning. Just yeah. like a little bit. I don't know. I think it's good.
So in the breakfast, what was inside? So I'm assuming so rice.
Like the breakfast burrito was like sausage and egg and rice and salsa and like.
So it's like a little. It's like you get a little maple.
It is literally just a burrito where instead of like whatever, it was literally a burrito with eggs in it, basically.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay, I mean, I can see that be a little weird, but I get it because like you get like the cinnamon and the sausage sort of mix. It makes it a little mapley, and so I can get down with that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
it's okay. Interesting.
That's the one I've gotten the weirdest, like the strongest. Like whoa, man, that's weird. My cooking is very conventional, so.
Yeah, I don't have anything that's too weird in terms of like spices. I do enjoy, which is probably not the most healthy thing, I really enjoy peanut butter and cream cheese on toast.
Oh my god.
Which is like, so what I actually enjoy fuck, cream, so to be fair, I enjoy cream cheese on a lot of things that most people probably don't, because cream cheese isn't amazing, but peanut butter and cream cheese on toast with maybe a little bit of butter is like so much fat. It's so bad for you. It tastes so good, though.
Oh my god, I can't. I'm like gagging at the thought of trying to eat that. Oh,
it's very sticky. So you need to like have some liquids near you to like wash it down. But yeah, peanut butter.
I guess like I'm not a fan of peanut butter.
That's fair. That's fair.
So
that's fair. That'd be rough.
Cream cheese, I do eat, but like peanut butter and cream cheese just sounds awful.
It's so good. If you want a little bit of a smoothie, you can do cream cheese and jelly on toast. But that seems a little bit more conventional.
See, that's just like making a PB, like a toasted PB&J with like one of the pieces of bread.
Yeah. But no, yeah, peanut butter and cream cheese. I used to eat those sandwiches all the time because I was lazy. So I'd be like, I can buy peanut butter and cream cheese in bulk. Easy, slap them together. But it's only Philadelphia cream cheese. If you eat any other cream cheese from any other company, you're just awful. Only Philadelphia cream cheese.
Drawing a line in the sand there.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a similar line in the sand for brands of peanut butter, or is like any peanut butter good?
So I will say that crunchy peanut butter, not my favorite. So if it has like, I don't like crunchy peanut butter, as long as it's creamy and smooth, I don't care. Jif, Skippy, store brand, does not matter.
Okay.
Peanut butter is whatever. But cream cheese has to be Philadelphia cream cheese. So, Soji, that's cinnamon and breakfast burritos and cream cheese and peanut butter sandwiches. That's what me and Emelson are eating nowadays. I don't cook. I mean, cooking wise, like spice wise, but to be fair, like my wife does all that. So I'm just like, when I'm left to my own devices, it is literally eating out most days. So, but Soji, thank you very much for the question. Next up, Blazeru is back with a question. No, sorry. Anzaru is back with a question. Shout out to the boy. They ask, do you have any experience with the current trinkets that I would consider bad gameplay, like Skulker's Wings, MacGarby Dance Sheet? Like, has it got you killed? Essentially, like, based on the current trinkets, have these ever gotten you killed?
It's macabre.
MacGarby.
Okay.
MacGarby Dance Sheet. I can't pronounce anything else if you know this.
It's so when like on Council of Blood, when they're like, I don't even remember what the voice line is, they say the word. This is the word that they're saying, macabre. This is the word. It's dumb that it's spelled this way. Yeah.
Why is the R and the E there?
Dude, I don't fucking know.
Oh my god. Okay, now that I've lost the question, because now you've made fun of the way I pronounce things, which
I didn't make fun of it, I just corrected it.
Thank you. Macabre. So I guess the question is, these are like trinkets that sort of proc something. You have to go like walk to it or like look at it.
So the question is, like, Spiker's Wing notably jumps you two things.
Okay, that's fair. Yep.
And it sometimes doesn't, like, it puts a buff on you, and the next thing you come in range of, it jumps you to. And it doesn't, if you're already in range of something, it doesn't always, like, immediately jump you to it. So sometimes it goes off at weird times, and my co-tank has used it on Sludge Fist, and it's a little bit spooky sometimes. But it does huge amounts of damage in the pillar, so I'm not going to complain.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm trying to think if there's any. And then the second part of the question that Andrew asks is, like, have you had any other similar, like not stupid deaths, but basically dummy deaths to, like, either other trinkets or other abilities, like, you know, rolling off of something? I think, to be fair, all of us have rolling stories of us, like, hitting roll and then going the wrong way.
Agrimmar, number one for me, just like off edge multiple times.
I'm trying to think. I've rolled off the edge. I rolled off the edge of Nazoth's room probably two or three times. Basically in when I was tanking the psycho things and whatever that down phase was, right?
Yeah.
My camera being weird and me like wanting to roll to the next tentacle, but like, of course, not pressing the right button, like literally rolled right off the edge.
I think,
so I've done that before.
I got turned around one time after coming down to the portal because, like, there's no landmarks in this like, big circular room with no meaningful features. So, like, I rolled. I was going. I was doing my thing. I was going the wrong way because, like, when I had started rolling, I had gotten just, like, turned around and it, like, pulled Psychus away from where the range stack was. And they're like... Wilson, where the hell are you going?
You're just like, oh, god damn it. Yeah.
And by it was too late. Like, we lost Stax and he did his cast and we all died.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the roll deaths are definitely. I've never died to like trinket, like a trinket don't have like that.
I probably would have died to it by this point.
I actively avoid trinkets where I have to like pick something up off the ground or like identify it because I know it's something that. It's just not worth it
Those trinkets are basically unusable for tanks because there was the one from Fallen Avatar, I think it was, in Tomb of Sargeras, or maybe it was from Maiden, that dropped orbs on the ground.
Yeah.
That you had to go and pick up, and it just dropped them all over the goddamn place, and, like, you could not pick them up as a tank because you had to have the boss position.
Exactly, yeah.
So, like, if you weren't actively tanking, you could go and get it, but otherwise you get no benefit from it while you're actually tanking. Some of them, like Pelagos, basically does that, but Pelagos drops orbs right underneath you, so it's mostly okay. You lose one every now and then, but for the most part, you can get them all.
Yeah.
So something like Macabre Sheep Music.
Macabre.
If there were a tank version of that, I would not touch it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. I don't think I've ever picked up those.
You can use that pre-pull, and the buff lasts while.
Oh, really?
No, unpull. I know a couple of people that have toyed with that. I don't know if that might have gotten nuked when they fixed things like the, what was it? The Covenant set bonus stuff, working on pull and like all that stuff.
That's funny. Yeah, no, yeah, that's, I'm trying to think of other dumb deaths I've had. It's always been to roll, though. Like, it's never been to like a trinket or even like flying serpent kick. I don't play Windwalker, so
right.
I'm trying to think of any other stupid ones. It's hard to
flying serpent kick off things when you don't have flying serpent kick.
That's true. That's true. It's much easier to roll into things. I had a death once. It was the bridge boss in Antorus. Because I didn't realize I still had Chi Torpedo on. Like doing the whole like understanding, and the best part is that I rolled and I didn't Chi Torpedo off the edge. I just got close, got nervous, back. Jumped, but then like just jumped off the edge. So like instead of being like just rolling straight off, be like, oh, you know, cheat torpedo, didn't understand range. It was whatever. It was like got really close to the edge, panicked, just jumped out of like, I need to stop this somehow. And like momentum wise just took me right over the edge to my death. So I've definitely done that before. So
I've wiped the raid to not on monk, but on my paladin to trying to bop someone and having it go off on myself instead, and like the boss turns around and starts beating people up.
I've gotten people killed on that on Stone Legion. Actually, this tier is nice. Basically like doing something else in the quarter second I have to bop on the leap from the Goliath, because we keep the Goliath alive, right? So that second leap that they do, you have to bop the person, or not have to, but like if they don't have a defensive and they're not ready, bopping them, and basically them dying in one swing, me clicking bop half a second later, bopping the tank, at which points the Goliath is already out in the range camp. Cleaves our druid, who notably has aggro.
He just turns around and starts slapping.
Yeah. And then it's like, well, great. Like, what am I going to do? So, yeah. Yep. So, but yeah, that's Anzaru. Thank you very much for the question there. You can see that most of like trinket wise, I think Emelson and I both try and avoid them in terms of
I have been trying to get a Skulker's Wing, but I have been unsuccessful. So,
gotcha, fair enough.
Streak Wing also drops my Walk with the Ox conduit. So, gotcha. I've been killing that every week since they added the conduit to it, and I have not gotten either yet. So,
fair enough. But definitely, thank you for the questions. Twitch chat friends, thank you also for the questions. Sort of a new thing this week. But yeah, other than that, I think this episode was actually a short episode, Emelson, but I think it was a four short one because I unfortunately have
you gotta get out of here. So we will wrap up the show here. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. As always, if you enjoyed the show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. That gets you access to our donor channels on the Peak of Serenity Discord, as well as some special stuff like Babylonius's Dungeons and Dragons campaign that is starting up, I think, next week. And of course, if you can't or don't want to financially contribute, you can always just come and hang out. Brew Lounge is always a good time. But
it's an okay time.
Okay time. Brew Lounge is better than Miss Lounge. And that is going to be our show today. Thank you all for listening. I got to end this before he can restore it. Goodbye.
See ya.
How is Reclear going for you guys?
We could talk about it. It went terribly. We had one of those weeks where just nothing goes right, and we literally killed four bosses. That's it. So we got Denathrius down literally like in the final maybe 20 minutes of raid, and we're just like, yeah, we're done. So
that's we have not yet re-killed Denathrius. That's been fun. So this is the fourth week, so we raid again tonight, and we are on Denathrius, and we really need people to stop dying to Massacre.
Yeah, ours was, we had our main tank got his second COVID shot, one of our tanks out. So he was out. So that contributed.
That's 100% it.
Yeah.
Like, you can just blame them, or blame the COVID shot, blame whatever you want, but that's why.
Yeah. So it was relearning some of the movement stuff. But I mean, I think even like we got to Denathrius pretty quick. And I mean, it was just like, actually, to be fair, our Stone Legion, I think, ended up being worse. And we had like three people in phase three run Wicked Blade to the normal spot for us, which is by the statue.
Yeah. And just nuked the raid.
Killed the raid. Like,
We would have killed Stone Legion generals probably 45 minutes sooner, except for when our raiders did that.
God.
And it's just like, oops, the raid's dead.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, it happened once. We're like, all right, you know, focus. And then it happened again. We're like, and it happened a third time. We're like, Jesus, guys. Like, so.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man. It was rough. We can talk. We should talk about that actually on the podcast a little bit. I'm going to just skip it. It's up to you.
I can. So I'm not doing this on the video ones, but I can actually throw that on the like at the end of the podcast in the audio one and just be like, here's a like a post credits thing.
Yeah.
I've done that a couple of times with some of our random chat from before the podcast starts.
That's awesome.
I don't know if anybody's ever listened to it or not. They might just stop when the music plays.
That's true. That's fair.
It is there.
Well, now they know.
Okay. Well, I guess we can go ahead and get this show started.
Sounds good.
So I'm going to do the intro in 3, 2, 1.